Last time we met, we were discussing, we had just gotten a little bit of chapter 27 done, and this chapter, the primary thing this chapter covers is this plot for Jacob to, by deception, steal away Isaac's birthright. Now, I don't know if you've noticed this or not, but this was one dysfunctional family. You know, you think of Isaac, and he was a great man of faith. There's no question about it. So was his wife, you know. Jacob became a great man of faith, but when you talk about a dysfunction, I mean, here we have Jacob's a liar. Poor Isaac, I don't know if he wasn't too swift. I mean, who comes in and is hungry and says, here, take my blessing for a pot of stew? Was he going to die if he walked another 100 feet to the next tent? Then you have Rebecca, who's a liar, who set this whole thing up for her son. So the family was very dysfunctional. And the reason I say that is because we are very dysfunctional, the whole human race. And God in the Bible doesn't sugarcoat things. That's one of the many arguments that the Bible is not a work of man, is man would not present himself this way naturally with all this stuff, that man would present himself as higher up and so forth and so on. But God tells it like it is, and one of the things that we see here is that in spite of all these things that are going on in the family, with this one deceiving this one, and, you know, Isaac by now, he's blind, he can't, you know, he's feeble and blind. But nonetheless, God's will is accomplished and the promise moves on, in spite of, you know, and he chose them and made a promise. For the sake of his father Abraham, Isaac was to receive the blessing. Okay, so we're on page 107. And you notice the way we're dividing this up. We're going through the different relationships to show what happened in different relationship. So now verses 18 to 29, we're going to read a little bit and study a little bit about Jacob and Esau. 18 to 29. Okay, see me during the break. And we'll straighten it out. Okay, so 18 to 29. And we read, then he came to his father and said, my father, and he said, here I am. Who are you, my son? Now, just to refresh our memories, I should, what happened before that, Jacob had wanted to bless Esau. Now, right away, he's moving in the wrong direction because it says the older will serve the younger. But Esau was his favorite because he had a taste for game, and Esau was a hunter. And so Jacob says to his son Esau, go and hunt and make me a savory meal like I like. Now Rebecca over here says, oh, so that I might, you know, bless you. And Rebecca overhears this, and Jacob was Rebecca's favorite. So Rebecca, devious woman that she was, says to Joseph, to Jacob, look, your brother's out hunting for food. He's going to bring it to your father and get a blessing. Why don't you go get the blessing before he gets back? And Jacob's response is, oh, no, it's not me. I mean, he's blind, but he can feel me. He'll feel that I'm a smooth man. Remember how Esau's a hairy man and stuff? She says, don't worry about it. And she goes to the trouble of covering his skin with animal skin that is hairy like Esau's. And she puts Esau's clothes on him. Okay, and she cooks a savory meal for him. And as a matter of fact, she goes so far, it doesn't tell us in detail how she does it, but she takes a goat or a lamb. In Hebrew, those, it's all synonymous. It's all the four-legged. But she takes a goat or a lamb or whatever, I think it was a lamb, and she prepares this meal hurriedly because she wants Jacob to get in there and get the blessing that Jacob had promised to Esau. So, having said that, we'll read verses 18 through 29. Then he came to his father and said, "My father," and he said, "Here I am. Who are you, my son?" Now listen to this. Jacob said to his father, "I am Esau, your firstborn." I mean, that's, you know, that's way down there on the ethics list to do something like that. So Isaac said to his son, "How is it that you have it so quickly, my son?" Of course, normally it could take a few hours for him to go and hunt and do this. It's as though he was expecting to have it for dinner and all of a sudden it comes for lunch. And so Isaac says, "How is it that you have it so quickly, my son?" And he said, "Because the Lord your God caused it to happen to me." I mean, this guy was like, lies just rolled off of his tongue like there was no conscience at all. Unbelievable. He tries to get God into the picture to rationalize the whole thing, which was not true. Then Isaac said to Jacob, "Please come close that I may feel you, my son, whether you are really my son Esau or not." See, he was blind and he couldn't see, but the voice didn't sound quite right. Now, his hearing was probably not that great either. He's an old man. And so then it says, so Jacob came close to his father and he felt him and said, "The voice is the voice of Jacob, but the hands are the hands of Esau." He did not recognize him because his hands were hairy like his brother's hands, so he blessed him. As you can see, he didn't look too far into all of this. He said, "Ah, you're Esau," and he blessed him. And he said, "Are you really my son Esau?" And he said, "I am." You know, I once did something I wasn't supposed to do when I was a teenager. And it was something, this is a long time ago, so don't judge me. A friend of mine and I did vandalism a little bit. But we justified, of course, the guy we vandalized was, we didn't like him at all. So, of course, within 2 seconds, everybody in the neighborhood knew who did it. You know, it's impossible when you're a kid to get away with anything. And so this man who lived in this house came over to our house. We were just finishing up dinner, and he said to my father, "So-and-so, somebody has done this to my property, and I think your son may know something about it." When all was said and done, my father said to me, "As that man started speaking, I looked at your face and saw that you were a liar." He knew the lie was going to come, you know, and he was right. I tried to make up some crazy, convoluted lie that even I didn't believe. So it's just the way we are. So he said, "Bring it to me and I will eat of my son's game that I may bless you." And he brought it to him and he ate. He also brought him wine and he drank. Then his father Isaac said to him, now bear in mind, he thinks he's talking to Esau. "See this," well, so he came close and kissed him. No, then the father Isaac said to him, "Please come close and kiss me, my son." So he came close and kissed him, and when he smelled the smell of the garments, which were Esau's garments, he blessed him and said, "See, the smell of my son is like the smell of a field which the Lord has blessed. Now may God give you the dew of heaven and the fatness of the earth and an abundance of grain and new wine. May people serve you and nations bow down to you. Be master of your brothers, and may your mother's sons bow down to you. And of course, one of his mother's sons was who? Esau. But there were other sons as well. And now he uses some verbiage that's actually in the Abrahamic covenant. She says to him, cursed be those who cursed you, and blessed be those who blessed you. Okay. This is like, what is it? All my children are one of those. It's like a soap opera already. So, going to the notes, Jacob and Esau. Jacob deceived his father and obtained the blessing. Now, let me explain. Did I explain about covenants back in those days as compared to today? They can't be broken even if there's fraud. And that's why you got to be careful what you do. That's why you got to be careful what you do. You know, when Yeshua said, don't vow before this, he knew what he was talking about. You've got to be very, very careful about promising somebody you're going to do something or be there. Better just let your yes be yes and your no be no. Don't say, I promise I will come, and something happens you can't, and then your whole reputation is shot, and you're never trusted again. Okay. So Jacob deceived his father and obtained the blessing. Prodded by his mother, he lied twice to his father. First about his identity, he said, I am Esau. And also he said, I am Esau, again, the first time in verse 9 and the second time in verse 18. And second, that God had given him success in hunting. That was a lie. He hadn't even hunted. But you know what Shakespeare said? Oh, what a tangled web we weave when first we practice to deceive. There he is. I've learned, when you tell a lie, then there's going to have to be another lie to cover up whatever holes are in your lie. Then there's another lie, and the windup is the whole thing becomes a mess of deception. And you're in a spider web that you can't get out of. My father and my mother were real big on that, on telling the truth. If I did something wrong and my father asked me about it, he would get angry. But if I lied about it, that was worse than whatever I did. He was very big on telling the truth. And so, three times the old man voiced his suspicion. In verses 20, 22, and 24. But he, the word he should be in there, but he was deceived by his senses of touch, verses 16 and 23, and smell, verse 27. So the senses that he did have, although he was blind, he relied on his senses of touch and smell. And to tell you the truth, it doesn't say it in the scripture, but I wouldn't be surprised if he just wanted to start eating. He didn't want to have a whole hour-long debate as to who this was in front of him. He was hungry and he wanted to eat. The blessing included prosperity in crops, verse 28, dominion over other nations and his brothers, and cursing those who cursed them and blessing those who blessed them. Now, one of the most dramatic promises in the Abrahamic covenant is that prophecy and that promise, I will bless those who bless you and I will curse those who curse you. And when we look down through history, we see that's always been true. For example, Egypt. Egypt cursed the Jewish people. They did evil to them, right? But look what happened to Egypt. It was a ruined pile of rubble. And then Haman. Haman didn't like Mordecai because Mordecai wouldn't bow down to him. And Mordecai was Jewish. So Haman went to the king and he lied. He said, these Jewish people, they don't go by our laws. They don't do that. You know, and so the king was in agreement. Well, do away with them. Do what you want. And Haman went and built a gallows that he was going to hang Haman on this particular day. And there was also an edict made that anyone who wanted to could take up the sword against a Jewish person and kill them and not worry about any penalty. So Mordecai speaks to Esther, who was the queen, and he says to Esther, go and speak to the king and tell him just what's going on here, this plot. And I don't think up to this point that the king knew that she was Jewish. It appears that way. Because her response to Mordecai was, I might die if I do that. You see, in those days, when the king was in his throne room, you didn't just walk in. You had to be invited in or called for. If you did walk in, and the king held out his scepter to you, you were safe. But if he didn't, you would die. So she was afraid of that. And Mordecai's response to her was, don't you think that because of the position you're in that you will escape anything that the other Jewish people escape? And who knows? God will see his will accomplished in this, and someone else may get the blessing, but it's intended for you. God has called you to this position and this time for this situation. So Esther, remember, she fasted for 3 days and she went in, and you know the rest of the story. But Haman was hanged on the gallows made for Mordecai. Oh, I'll bless those who bless you and curse those who curse you. And in Jewish thinking, there's what is known as the law of reversal. And the law of reversal is when somebody or some people try to curse the Jewish people, often the curse just falls back on them. And that's, for example, what happened to Haman. And Nazi Germany, they cursed the Jewish people. And the Jewish people had to go into hiding or they would die. Well, what happened after World War II? The Nazis all had to go into hiding. So it was reversed. It's called the law of reversal. Okay? So, and smell, he blessed Jacob thinking he was Esau. Now, again, that might seem strange to us because in our day, there are certain, if you go to court and you can establish that there's a contract, you have it all written up, but there's clear evidence that one of the parties in the court, in the contract, committed a fraud, then that contract would be null and void. He could not demand the other party to do what he had promised. But in this culture, it was different. You had to be very careful about who you entered into agreements with. Because once you entered into an agreement with someone, that was it. There was no going in front of any judge and saying he committed fraud. It just didn't happen. And so when Isaac... But I think I may have given you the example of those people who came to, when Joshua was coming into the land. Did I give you that example yet? Remember when Joshua and the Jewish people entered the promised land and they had to go around destroying all the nations? And remember there was this one nation that saw what was going on. So what they did was they took some of their men and dressed them up in clothes that looked like they had been walking for 300 miles. They gave them skins, you know, to hold the water, which were just about empty, and no food. And so they came up into the camp and said to Joshua, we are such and such a people from real far away, and we've been journeying to find a place to live, and this is a very nice place. We'd like to live among you and have a covenant of peace with you. And Joshua and everybody, they were all really wary of this. They were wary of it. But nonetheless, they made the decision, okay, these people, the facts seem to meet up with what they're saying, and so they accepted these people and made this, they made this covenant with this people. Later on, they found out that they had been deceived. It was too late to do anything about it. Joshua couldn't go up to these people and say, you lied, and so our agreement with you is void. He couldn't do that. Because in those days, when you made a covenant, the covenant was secure. Okay? You know, in our day, there's certain elements that have to be in a contract in order for it to be enforceable in court. There has to be what's called the meeting of the minds and a whole bunch of stuff. In that day, if I made a promise to you and we entered into a covenant, and after we entered into it, I mean, let's suppose, for example, I owned a piece of land. And at night, when everybody was asleep, one of my neighbors came onto my piece of land. He just had a suspicion, and he started to dig, and he found out, sure enough, there's gold, and a lot of gold on this land. And so he comes to me in the morning and says to me, I'd like to buy this piece of land from you. And he offers me even a little bit more than market value. And without thinking about it, I said, oh, that's good. And I entered into the covenant with him. And then the next day, I see him digging and taking out these big ingots of gold from the land. You'd think I would want to walk up to him and say, whoa, forget it. When did you find out this gold was here? And he says, I knew it all the time. He said, then you deceived me. It's too bad. So you had to be really careful in those days. Okay, next, verses 30 through 40. Now we're going to talk a little bit about Esau and Isaac. Then Isaac, his father... Wait, we shouldn't be... We didn't read something yet. What didn't we read? 18 to 29. 18... Now it, yeah, that's, I have my verses wrong. You know, I have to make a little bit of a change. You see where it says 18 to 29? That's right. But then the next thing should really be 30 to 40. Is that what it says? Oh, well, there you go. See how smart I am? Anyway. Now it came about as soon as Isaac had finished blessing Jacob, and Jacob had hardly gone out from the presence of Isaac his father, that Esau his brother came in from his hunting. Esau had done no wrong. He did as his father said. Like I said, it seems as though Esau was a little slow. Then he also made savory food and brought it to his father. And he said to his father, let my father arise and eat of his son's game that you may bless me. Isaac, his father, said to him, who are you? And he said, I am your son, your firstborn Esau. Then Isaac trembled violently and said, you know, Isaac realized what had happened and that it was irreversible. His reaction, I can only imagine. He trembled violently. Wait a minute. And said, who was he then that hunted game and brought it to me, so that I ate of it before you came and blessed him? Yes, and he shall be blessed. There's nothing anybody could do about this now. When Esau heard the words of his father, he cried out with an exceedingly great and bitter cry. And said to his father, bless me, even me also, O father. And he said, your brother came deceitfully and has taken away your blessing. Then he said, is he not rightly called Jacob? For he has supplanted me these two times. He took away my birthright, and behold, now he has taken away my blessing. And he said, have you not reserved the blessing for me? Isaac's in a tough spot right now because there's not much more you can give in terms of a blessing than what he already gave to Jacob. But to do something to appease his son and to give his son something, he gave a blessing. And remember, these blessings were prophetic. These were oracles. These were prophetic. Okay? Then Isaac, his father, answered and said to him, behold, away from the fertility of the earth shall be your dwelling, and the way from the dew of heaven from above. By your sword you shall live, and your brother you shall serve. But it comes about when you become restless that he will break, that you will break his yoke from your neck. And that's the best he could do. It's really not much of a blessing, but it's the best he could do under those circumstances. Okay. Yeah, let's go to the notes, Esau and Isaac. Soon Esau came home and pleaded for a blessing from his father. When Esau brought in his food, emotion ran high. Isaac trembled violently. It says that twice, I don't know why. Over what had happened, and Esau was very bitter and angry. Esau must have been beside himself. You know, it isn't enough that he took away my birthright. Now, what else does he want, you know? Isaac knew that he had been tampering with God's plan and had been overruled. Now, here's the interesting thing that's happening here is God has a plan and a purpose. And God's plan and purpose cannot be altered or removed or revoked by the actions of a human being or human beings. His plan will absolutely come to be. Now, certainly, the best way to do it is to follow him and be obedient to his will and have it come to pass. But if God's will is that such and such happens, and I don't like that, and I try and stop it from happening, I won't be able to. And so, if you look at 25:23, in verse 25 was when the twins are born, and go back to verse 22, but the children struggled together within her. That's when she was still pregnant with Isaac and Jacob. I'm sorry, with Esau and Jacob. If it is so, why am I this way? So she went to inquire of the Lord. What's happening in my belly? And the Lord said to her, two nations are in your womb, and two peoples will be separated from your body, which did come to pass. Both Isaac and Esau became the forefathers of great nations. Now the first came, oh no, I'm reading ahead of myself. Two nations are in your womb, and two peoples will be separated from your body, and one people shall be stronger than the other, and the older will serve the younger. So, when right away, I mean, I haven't had any good things to say about any members of that family yet. I haven't said anything bad about Isaac. But you can see right away Isaac had his issues, because Isaac knew what God's purpose and plan was. And he didn't like it. He liked Esau. He didn't want the older to serve the younger. So he was trying to thwart God's plan. And in all these, you know, Isaac trying to thwart the plan of God, Rebecca lying, Jacob lying, Esau out there running around after a game, whatever else happened, God's purpose was accomplished. We cannot prevent God's purpose from being accomplished. And so that's why it's so important to be in his will, because, for example, if God gives you an opportunity to witness to somebody and you don't do it for whatever reason, and that can happen to us, that person is going to get witnessed to. And that person may well get saved. And you will lose out on your reward that you would have received for sharing the gospel. But just because you don't do what God told you to do doesn't mean that God isn't going to save that person. His will is always accomplished. So that's where we are right now. And so, in A, Isaac knew he had been tampering with God's plan and had been overruled. There was no going back now. Esau began to see, should be in there. Esau began... Wait, Isaac knew he had been tampering with God's plan and had been overruled. There was no going back now. Esau began to see the true nature of Jacob. The cat was out of the bag. Twice he had overreached or deceived Esau by taking his birthright and now by taking the blessing. All that was a blessing... No, that I don't like the way that reads. It should be all that was left was a blessing for a profane person. That's all that was left. He'd already given just about everything away. So all that was left was a blessing for a profane person. Esau would not enjoy the riches or heaven's due. The Edomites, Esau's descendants, would live in a land less fertile than Canaan. Also, Esau would live by force, be subservient to Jacob, and be restless. So, I mean, obviously, if you compare the blessing that Jacob deceptively received and the blessing that Esau received, there's really like no comparison. So, in a sense, Rebekah and Jacob won. It seems as though this is what they set out to do, and they did it. Yet they had not gained anything God would not have given them anyway, and they lost much. Think about it. If they had believed God totally, they wouldn't have done this because they would have said, it's going to come to pass anyway. Let God do his thing. It doesn't matter what Isaac says to Esau. What matters is what God said. And God said, what God said is in complete agreement with what our desire is. So, but instead they come up with this deceptive plot. And it really hurt the family because the sons were now at enmity with one another. His wife was exposed as a liar. Jacob was exposed as a liar. Let me tell you something. This was one dysfunctional family. It really was. And, you know, that's not unusual. There are many godly men, pastors, who go home and they didn't even want to go home. You know, we should not assume, and this is a mistake some people make. You go to a church for the first time. Check it out. You like everything about it. The pastor gets up and gives a message. And you listen to the message because, of course, you're concerned about the teaching ministry in the church. And it's one of the best messages you've ever heard. So you come to the conclusion that this man must be a spiritual man to preach like that. And nothing can be further from the truth. He may be a spiritual godly man, but he may be a backslider. You know... There's nothing in the Bible that says, as a form of discipline, a believer can have one or more of his gifts taken away. So if you have a gift of teaching, you have that gift. Now, you may lose great rewards that are available to you because you're not using the gift properly or because you're hypocritical, but you still have that gift. And an example I can give is, what's his name who got caught twice and cried? Televangelist had a big, big ministry and he got caught with a prostitute in his car.
Billy James Hargis?
Who?
Was it Billy James Hargis?
No.
He did more recently.
Oh, why can't I remember his name? Who? No, not Jim Baker. This happened after Jim Baker. The guy who was... He also played the piano and made albums. And he would pace back and forth, and he had clearly a gift of teaching.
Copeland?
Excuse me?
Copeland?
No, not Copeland. I just can't think of his name. He would sit at the piano and sing. Yeah, he had was also a musician. But he's still on television, but his audience has dwindled down considerably, and his finances obviously have dwindled down considerably. So you don't want to turn on the television and see this man's great preacher and draw the conclusion that his life lives up to his teaching. It should, but it might not. Jimmy Swaggart.
Swaggart,
right. Okay. He was a, you got to give it to him. I mean, I don't agree with everything he said, but he could stir the heart. He could definitely do that. But look what his life was like. As a matter of fact, I was watching once on television on like 60 Minutes or something, and they had this guy on, and this guy said, "Ah, Jimmy Swaggart and I used to, whatever they used to do, they did. I don't know what it was." But he said, "Then one night, we went to a tent meeting." You know how they used to have the tent meetings, and everybody would sit, they have chairs set up, and the evangelists would get up and preach the gospel, and then they'd pass around a collection plate. And Jimmy Swaggart and this other fellow are sitting there looking at this, and they see all this money. And they say to one another, "We could do that." And so they started a tent ministry. And it was, they made a lot of money doing it. And the guy, it was almost humorous. The guy said to the commentator, "I was better at it than he was." And he started to preach for about 30 seconds. And you should have heard this guy. People might have gotten saved watching this show. He was so good. But he was a thief. And by the way, as a rule of thumb, since I'm on this, I do not believe that at a meeting such as a tent meeting, where you're preaching the gospel so that people should get saved, I don't think you should take an offering at one of those places. Because what you're doing is you're saying salvation is a free gift. Now let's pass the plate. There's something wrong with that. Okay? But what I'm trying to get across here is, if you want to determine the spiritual nature of a man, you don't do it by measuring his gifts. That's just not the way to do it. You know? Because he may or may not be spiritual. God doesn't give us our gifts because we're spiritual. As a matter of fact, we receive our gifts the instant we're saved. So it's not yet been revealed what kind of believer we want to be.
That's what many things in the charismatic movement, they believe.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, page 108. The story is one of paternal favorism, which tore the family completely apart. Look what happened to his family. The story is also an account of spiritual insensitivity. All the natural senses play a conspicuous part, especially the taste in which Isaac prided himself, but which gave Isaac the wrong answer. Reliance on one's senses for one's spiritual discernment not only proves fallible, but often irrevocably fails up life. You know when it says we walk by faith and not by sight? I think we can validly expand that by sight is one of the six senses, right? I think it would be valid to say we walk by faith, not by our senses. Not by the way things look, not by the way things feel, but what the Word of God teaches. And remember, faith, the way I defined it, faith is obedience to the Word of God. And if we're obedient to the Word of God, and we don't feel like we want to do something, but we do it, then that's faith. Because God's not going to judge us for our feelings. He'll work on them, but he's concerned with what we do. Okay? So we should follow the Word, even if circumstances and our natural senses say differently, and they often may. If there's no clear word from God, then the answer is wait on the Lord. Don't go barging ahead when God hasn't spoken to you. Through the word, through counsel, however it may be, you don't want to just forge ahead unless you know that God has opened the door. Otherwise, you're going to bump into the door. Okay? All right, let's take our first break now. And we'll come back and continue. Okay, the flight of Jacob. Verses 41 to 46. So let's first read verses 41 to 46. What chapter? What? Something's wrong. We're in chapter 20. What chapter is that? 27. Yeah, we're up to, we have to read 41. Let me see this. I got to get this straightened out. We're in page 20, we're in chapter 27. No, that's not the, I know that, but I want to get to the right scriptures. And it's verses 41 to 40. Okay, here we go. Starting with chapter, with verse 41, and we're on page 108 in the notes. And we're going to read, actually, the rest of the chapter. So Esau bore a grudge against Jacob because of the blessing with which his father had blessed him. And Esau said to himself, "The days of mourning for my father are near, then I will kill my brother." Now when the words of her elder son Esau were reported to Rebekah, and that kind of reveals again Esau, I mean, if I were going to kill someone, I wouldn't. How did Rebekah find out? Esau must have told somebody who told somebody who told Rebekah. If I planned to kill someone, I wouldn't tell anyone about it.
He already had two wives.
Excuse me?
Esau already had two wives at this point. So
okay. Okay. I wouldn't tell my wife.
He said it to himself. He didn't say it to anybody else. It says right here in verse 41, he said to himself, "Days of mourning are of my father are near."
Yeah, but then in 42 it says, "Now when the words of her elder son Esau were reported to Jacob," he must have verbalized it to somebody. Okay, now therefore my son, now when the words of her elder son Esau were reported to Rebekah, she sent and called her younger son Jacob and said to him, "Behold, your brother Esau is consoling himself concerning you by planning to kill you." This is like, you know, what's that hospital? So it's like all the soap operas rolled into one. It's really amazing. You could make a soap opera based on this plot. Okay, now therefore, my son, and of course, Rebekah was just the one you want to go to for advice when you have a problem. "Now therefore, my son, obey my voice and arise, flee to Haran to my brother Laban." Now we've already kind of met Laban earlier, and so we're going to go back to Laban a little bit. "Stay with him a few days until your brother's fury subsides." Rebekah doesn't seem to be too swift either. If I'm angry at you enough to kill you on Wednesday, what, Sunday as well? "Until his fury subsides, until your brother's anger against you subsides and he forgets what you did to him." Didn't you do something to me a few days ago? I don't recall.
You're missing the point.
"Why should I be bereaved of both of you in one day?" Rebekah said to Isaac, now here she's plotting away again, "I am tired of living because of the daughters of Heth. If Jacob takes a wife from the daughters of Heth like these, from my daughters of the land, what good will my life be to me? She was a real manipulator, you know? The flight of Jacob. This passage begins with the transition to the Laban stories. We're going to be moving over to what we call the Laban stories right now. Because of his deception, Jacob had to flee from home. But the occasion began the motif of Jacob finding a wife from his relatives in the east. While Abraham had remained in the land, while Abraham's servant had gone to fetch Isaac a wife, Jacob's journey was necessitated by the imminent danger of being killed by his angry brother, that should be, not brighter. So he has to run away. And of course, you don't want to run away to any old city. Go to our relatives in Haran and stay with them. Moreover, God would deal with Jacob severely under the hand of Laban, his uncle. Indeed, the sojourn out of the land in several ways parallels the later sojourn of Jacob's family in Egypt. But you can see what's happening here. God is working in the life of Jacob. Sometimes, if somebody does something wrong, not immoral, but they do something wrong, sometimes the only way they're going to learn that what they did to somebody was wrong when it's done to them. And they can then identify with the person and empathize for them. So God did use Laban. I mean, Laban, here's another conniver. You know, it's... Okay. Now, moreover, God would deal with Jacob severely under the hand of Laban, his uncle. Indeed, the sojourn out of the land in several ways parallels the later sojourn of Jacob's family in Egypt. And you see, one of the things we always want to keep in the back of our mind is the only safe place for the Jewish people is Israel. And God, when he would discipline them, the strictest discipline he could give them was expulsion from the land, like the Babylonian captivity, because then they're at the mercy of the nations who hate them, who are basically speaking anti-Semitic. Rebekah told Jacob about Esau's anger and immediately told him to go to her brother in Haran. Again, deceiving her husband for the sake of her son, she expressed disgust with her two Hittite daughters-in-law, Judith and Basemath, and urged Isaac to let Jacob, the word two shouldn't be in there, to get a wife from her own people. And that way, Jacob could flee with Isaac's blessing. Okay? So what we have here now is we have, let's back up a little bit. When we go through the genealogy, we have Terah. Remember him? Terah was the father of Abraham, Nahor, and Haran. So Terah was Abraham's father. Nahor, Abraham, and Haran were brothers. Haran had a son who would therefore be Abraham's nephew named Lot, and then Haran died. And Abraham kind of adopted him into his family. And Abraham, of course, also had Isaac and Jacob. I'm sorry, Jacob had... Wait, Isaac had Jacob and Esau, and they would be Abraham's grandsons. Just so we can get a picture of how the family is. Okay? And then Nahor gave birth to Laban, who would be Abraham's nephew. Okay? Laban also gave, well, he didn't give birth, his wife did, had Rachel. So Rachel, in a sense, was a cousin of Jacob. Rachel was a cousin of Jacob. although he was what they call a cousin once removed. And what that means is this. Suppose my father has a brother, and my father and my mother have a child, and my father's brother and my uncle have a child. We're cousins, right? But suppose my father and mother have a child, and then my father's brother and his wife has a child, and that child gets married and has a child. So that's still my cousin, but they call it once removed because I'm a generation before him. So they were cousins once removed, but nonetheless, they were family. And family was very important in those days. Okay. Now we'll get a little start on chapter 28. First of all, you see where it says Jacob blesses Jacob? It should be Isaac blesses Jacob. I think I must have typed this on a Thursday because Thursday is schnapps day. Isaac blesses Jacob and commands him not to marry a Canaanite woman. Verses 1 through 9. So Isaac called Jacob and blessed him and charged him and said to him, "You shall not take a wife from the daughters of Canaan. Arise, go to Paddan Aram, to the house of Bethuel, your mother's father, and from there take to yourself a wife from the daughters of Laban, your mother's brother." So you can see that this is once again an illustration of how the forefathers really watched over and protected the promises. They didn't want any assimilation. They wanted the Jewish people to remain the Jewish people and say, "We want to keep everything in the family." Okay? "May God Almighty bless you and make you fruitful and multiply you, that you may become a company of peoples. May he also give you the blessing of Abraham to you and your descendants with you, that you may possess the land of your sojournings, which God gave to Abraham." So we can see that things are being set up for Jacob to be the next in the line of the seed. "Then Isaac sent Jacob away, and he went to Paddan Aram to Laban, the son of Bethuel, the Aramean, the brother of Rebekah, the mother of Jacob and Esau. Now Esau saw that Isaac had blessed Jacob and sent him away to Paddan Aram to take a wife from there, and that when he blessed him, he charged him, saying, 'You shall not take a wife from the daughters of Canaan.' And that Jacob had obeyed his father and his mother and had gone to Paddan Aram. So Esau saw that the daughters of Canaan displeased his father Isaac, and Esau went to Ishmael and married, besides the wives he had, Mahalath, the daughter of Ishmael, Abram's son, the sister of Nebaioth." So here we have a man of wisdom and a high IQ going off and marrying. You know, he hears what Isaac has to say to Jacob, and he says, "I got the short end of the stick. I'm going to give them some trouble." His thinking seems to be off a little bit. Certainly not in line with God. Yes?
I think by marrying a daughter of Isaac, he's marrying a non-Canaanite.
So say that again?
He's trying to do the right thing. He heard him hear that.
When I read this, it seems as though he's doing it vengefully. Yeah, but what I'm saying is he went and married the very people that Isaac had said, "Don't marry into that group of people."
Ishmael was not a Canaanite.
That's not the point. The point is that that Esau heard that Jacob was commanded by Abraham to do thus and such, and he did the exact opposite. Now, there's other perspectives you can look at that, but that's what he did. That's what the text says he did. He heard that Jacob had gone, been commanded by his father to go to Haran and marry somebody in our family, and he ran off and married somebody from the very tribe that Jacob didn't want his sons to marry from. Whatever else we get out of that is fine, but that seems to be the thrust of these of this particular passage. Okay, where was I? 28. You see where it says, look, now Esau saw that Isaac had blessed Jacob and sent him away to Paddan Aram to take himself a wife from there, and that when he blessed him, he charged him, saying, you shall not take a wife from the daughters of Canaan. And that Jacob had obeyed his father and his mother and had gone to Paddan Aram. So Esau saw that the daughters of Canaan displeased his father Isaac, and Esau went to Ishmael and married besides the wives he had, Mahalath, the daughter of Ishmael, Abram's son, and the sister of Naboth. It seems as though he did this vengefully. He did exactly what his father had told Jacob not to do. Now, there may be other dynamics there. I'm not denying that. But at this point in time, it seems that Esau, he was really fair game for Jacob, because Jacob was a very intelligent man, although a very deceptive man. Esau seems to me as though, I don't want to say he wasn't intelligent, maybe he was, but he doesn't seem to play the game very well, the game of life, whatever it is. He makes very poor decisions. He suffers because of those decisions, and then he blames others because of ultimately his own decisions. I mean, who in the world is going to say, give me that pot of stew and I'll give you my blessing? That's a little absurd. It's a little absurd. I don't think he would have died if he walked a few hundred more feet to another tent. It just doesn't make any sense to me. But that was the character of Esau. Esau was a man of the field. He was a hunter. And when he killed something, he wanted to eat it, and he wanted to eat it now. That was his priority. And I don't think he really fully understood the import of the blessing or of the being the firstborn. I don't think he just didn't get it, you know? Okay. Esau, now here's what I have here. Where's Mahalath? Who did he? Okay, you may be right about something, because here's what I have here. Esau, in an attempt to please his parents, married a woman named Mahalath, who was a descendant of Abraham. So you may be right. However, the woman was a descendant through Ishmael, of Abraham through Ishmael. This mixed marriage outside of the land of promise indicates that Ishmael did not understand the Abrahamic covenant and the reason for keeping the line of the seed pure. Both physical and spiritual purity must be practiced if one desires to please God. So you were right about you were right. His motive was not a bad. He didn't. It seems as though he didn't do this vengefully. I'm corrected. It seems as though he wanted to do something to please his parents and get in their good graces, but he just didn't have. There's a word in Yiddish, sechel. And it means like street smarts. It means like you got a good head. It seems as though he didn't have that. He didn't understand. He thought, well, Jacob's getting married. If I'll get married, my parents will be happy with me. But he went off to marry the wrong people. Okay. Ironically, the unchosen son of Isaac, who was Esau, married into the unchosen line of Ishmael. So he's out. He is way out of the line now. He never was in the line, but now he's way out of the line. Okay. Okay. We'll cover a little more, and then we'll take a break. Let's see how far this goes. Yeah, I guess we could do 10 to 22. Let me just check something. We could finish the chapter. No, this is a good stopping point, because if we try to continue, we're going to have to finish the chapter or stop at a very awkward place and then come back and read the original text over again. It's not that it's going to take us that long to do this, but it'll take longer than we really should. So we'll stop. Actually, what we'll do is we'll begin with chapter 8, 28, next time, and just take about 5 minutes to review what we've seen there already. What's the next Thursday's the 10th, right? Okay, let's close with a word of prayer. Let me do this first. What do I do here?